evening, everyone, and welcome to the Monday, September 27th meeting of the City Council. Let the record show that all council members are present, and we'll begin our meeting with a moment of silence. Thank you. I see Hank Roth back there in the background. Would you lead the pledge for us, please?
I'm just going to send Bill Pierce a text wishing him happy birthday, belated. I pledge allegiance.
CRASB is working with the SFA leadership to better the school year with more activities and opportunities for other students. For example, just a week, maybe a week and a half ago, our ASB and FFA leadership team went to the ropes course in San Luis Obispo, Camp Roberts. And also, this Friday is the end of progress reports, so they'll be mailed out, and you're probably going to receive them on Tuesday. Recently, we had our first student senate meeting. In this meeting, leaders of clubs, ASBs, and sports meet and discuss upcoming events to synchronize the calendar. Last meeting, we went over our club rush and what clubs were going to come through this year. During club rush, we had 18 clubs, six more than last year, and we're really looking forward to seeing what they have to offer. As far as fall sports go, it's going good. We just had a football game against Lowe this Friday, and we had followed by a dance afterwards. And next week is our homecoming week, October 4th through October 9th. Our theme is Rescue Me. On October 5th, we're going to have a movie night. On the 6th is our carnival and powder puff, and on the 7th is a bonfire. On the 8th is the game, and on the 9th is the dance. And our FFA is having a drive-through barbecue this Wednesday, the 29th. The prices for tri-tip are $8, and prices for ribs are $13. That's it.
Great. Thank you. We'll look forward to seeing you again. All right. And for our business tonight, we have Ani Lynn's going to tell us all about the Harbor Festival coming up.
Good evening, Mayor, council members, city staff, and residents of Morro Bay. It's that time of year again. It really does take a village to put on this event, and you're all part of that. Everyone in this city really helps put it on. And because of that, I want to tell you some of the new things that we have going on this year. You really want to take advantage of buying that two-day pre-sale ticket for just $10. You can get that at Albertsons still up through Friday at 11 p.m. The reason why you want to do that is because this year we have two main headliners, the English rocker John Waite from the 80s and the blues legend Coco Montoya. We also have Damon Castillo, who will be following John Waite on Saturday, and I know he's a favorite of a lot of you here in this area. We also will have many of our local school bands out there, other bands playing, but we are all a part of a 20-city Zooniverse tour, which will put us hopefully on the map through our Disney and our Nickelodeon advertisement that will be going on. This is a tour that's going to bring in a new toy to present to everyone. There's going to be a lot of giveaways. There'll be things for both adults and children. We have a new 33-foot shark slide. We have a 62-foot dolphin obstacle for the kids. And again, due to the gracious giving of Morro Bay Furniture, the train ride will be free for all to enjoy. Out on the North T Pier, last year we had the Marine Education Program with the NEP. This year on the North T Pier is going to be the Fishermen's Association. You can learn how to make a fishing net. You can learn how to bait, and they're still going to have the fish prints. Also, on the South T Pier will be the NEP Marine Educational Program. We'll do again the zero waste, hoping that to educate everyone, and Noah's going to help us a little bit with that too. We have a lot of new vendors this year. A lot of the old ones are coming back too, but about 50 new ones. Several, I think about 30 of our local businesses will be out there. Gold Tree will be out there where you can open up an oyster and pick out a pearl and find the piece of jewelry that he has that you'd like to put it in. Seven Sisters will be out there with all their Morro Bay jewelry, selling pieces that they hope that many of our guests will want to buy. Bob's Big Boy, they're going to be heading up the Bear Garden. They'll have their little Bob's Big Boy on all the beer glasses out there. And also John Carlos has joined and coming in. He'll be in the food area there. There's many more. I couldn't remember all 30. Oh, I will remember this one. Our Morro Bay Drug and Gift. John will be out there offering you a flu shot, should you want to take one while you're at the event. He'll be offering you a whole lot more, too. This year, too, we put a silent auction page up on our website. If you look at the website there, you'll see the button that says silent auction. The silent auction is both Saturday and Sunday. It's from 11 to 4. Look at the items. We've put them up there. A lot of local people have given us beautiful items and some outside, including Disney, each and every one of those vendors out there, and see what they have to offer. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
I just assume everybody knows it's next weekend,
yes.
October 2nd and 3rd.
Looking forward to it. Okay, other announcements. The Bird Festival registration is going to open October 1st, and you can go online to morrobaybirdfestival.org and look at the schedule. A lot of the events sell out immediately, so if you are interested, get online on October 1st or pick up a brochure. I just gave some to Joe for the Rec and Parks Department. They'll also be at the library and the chamber as soon as I get them out there. But October 1st is the date for that. Coming up sooner than that is the Morro Bay Photo Expo, and that also has the website, and you can check on registration for that. That's coming up on the weekend of the 22nd of this October. So there's still some registration available on that. Notice of planned electric service interruption. Just wanted everybody to know, if you didn't get this in your mailbox, there is going to be an interruption of service on Friday, October 8th from midnight to 6 a.m. And it's going to affect the area between Kennedy Way, Quintana Road, Piney Way, and Harbor Street. So, again, that's between midnight and 6 a.m. This is a PG&E notice. If you have any other questions about that, call PG&E at 1-800-743-5000. That's 1-800-743-5000. Again, that's on Friday, October 8th. There will be an electricity outage. Other announcements? Betty? Rick?
The Partners in Community Action were here today, as they are every fourth Monday. Just as a reminder for you, at the community center, at the senior area, where trained medical people will take your blood pressure and answer your questions, take blood work from you and this kind of thing, free of charge. So keep that in mind. Also, believe it or not, we've already had initial meetings with our caroling cop cars and Thanksgiving dinner people. And Chief Olivas, do you have the dates of that off the top of your head?
Thank you. I have Thanksgiving, but I couldn't tell you.
Yeah, thanks. That Thanksgiving is tough. Yeah, it's on Thanksgiving. Okay, well, I think it's like the 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th. Anyway, we'll get back with you on that. And Mary Sponholtz at the Police Department is accepting donations towards the gifts that are given away to every child in Morro Bay. And we give thousands of these out every year. I think it was like 3,000 last year. It was mentioned, the chief brought up Thanksgiving. We are going to have the community dinner that's put on by the Rotary Club of Morro Bay and the Police Officers Association, a joint venture between the two like we have for years. And it's going to be on Thanksgiving Day, and that's where we're different from a lot of the surrounding communities. They do it the day before or day after. We do it on Thanksgiving Day. And we're going to have entertainment, and I'd like to thank some of the sponsors in advance. I'd like to butter them up because we're going to go see them this week for donations. That would be Cookie Crock, Mission Linen. Albertsons donates all the turkey toward our Thanksgiving dinner, which we really appreciate. Ace Miners Hardware is very generous. And Dorns will also help us out. So that's what we got going on right now.
Great. Yeah? Got it?
Thank you. I don't remember if the staff reports tonight or the police department.
Tonight, no.
No. Okay. Well, if in a minute, I was going to say Commander Chief Olivo, excuse me, having some memory loss here, could just talk. They had Operation Medicine Cabinet last weekend. I think we all got the information on what they collected, and I would just love for him to take a second to share that because it was a huge success that he coordinated along with Bruce Keogh, and now the county's participating in doing that. And then the other item is the Harbor Advisory Board will be discussing loading zones at the October 7th meeting. So anyone who's interested in, I believe it's a public hearing item, yes?
It's an action item, so the board can make a recommendation to you, and we will take public comment.
Thank you. It'll be October 7th at 7 p.m., so if anyone's interested in that, Harbor Advisory Meeting. And then, Chief Olivas, do you have the information on that?
Absolutely. Thank you. And Carolyn Kopkars is the December 7th, 8th, and 9th. I'll start off with that.
So, I did get that. Thanks.
We did Operation Medit. We actually did DEA had a one-day take-back program this Saturday, and they collected it all. They had to go in between 10 and 2, and they were using our lock boxes that we installed for the county's Operation Medicine Cabinet. And they took the totals. Morro Bay, we collected over 20 pounds of medication just that one day. And between San Luis and Ventura County, which is where DEA did their collection points, we had 10 in San Luis County, and they had about 8 in Ventura. They collected 690.
I'm just going to be a little bit, and I'm going to let you explain everything else. Whereas the city of Morro Bay recognizes that 78% of commuters in San Luis Obispo County commute to work by driving alone, which significantly contributes to air pollution, road congestion, and decreased quality of life locally and throughout the state. SLO Regional Rideshare, as a division of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, provides information, programs, and services on sustainable transportation choices for people living, working, and visiting San Luis Obispo County. Rideshare Month will include cash incentives and Ride the Bus Week, where participants can ride free, Vanpool Week, where new vanpools receive discounts, Carpool Week, where carpools can win free gas, and Ride Your Bike and Walk Week with bike breakfasts and energizer stations. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City of Morro Bay does hereby declare October 2010 as Rideshare Month in the City of Morro Bay. Okay.
Just briefly, each week of the month, they have chosen a particular mode that we'll be focused on, and starting on October 4th, it's the bus, the use of the bus, riding the bus, and there will be free rides on local and regional buses, and what matters to you is that includes Morro Bay Transit. So starting on Mondays through the end of that week, you can ride for free. The following week, it's going to be discount on the vanpool program. The week after that, it will be free gas coupon for carpools. And then the final week, there will be some incentive for people that ride their bicycle. What's key about the program, I left some coupon on the table, is you need to sign up under irideshare.org and enter how you traveled that week, even if it's just one time that week that you didn't drive your car by yourself. And you will be eligible every week for some prizes that will be drawn by Regional Rideshare. And then at the very end of the month, there will be a grand prize that will be pulled from all the participants from starting on October 1, which is Friday.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you.
All right, then we have closed session report. Rob?
Yes, good evening. Prior to the regular session, Council met in closed session to discuss pending litigation. This was a status report on all of the pending litigation the city is currently involved in. With this report, since it's a status of all the litigation, no action was taken that was recorded under the Brown Act.
Okay, thank you. Andrew, there's another announcement about electrical. Something?
That was one other announcement. I think property owners got announcements, and that's one the city received today for an electrical interruption on October 5th. If you would just read those streets as well.
Oh, okay. So October 5th from 8 to 3, oh my goodness, Bonita Street, La Jolla Street, Main Street, Reno Court, Greenwood Avenue, Elm Avenue, and Hemlock. They're all going to be out of power from 8 to 3.
That's the announcement that we got, probably because we own, I'm guessing, something there.
On Tuesday, October 5th. Okay.
And the property owners got those as well.
Okay, so the property owners are aware. Okay.
And that was 8 a.m.?
Wow. Okay. All right, closed session report was made, and then we go to public comment. So anything not on the public hearing agenda?
Madam Mayor, City Council, and the worker bees of Morro Bay, we're very, very excited because the Historical Society, Morro Bay Historical Society.
Sorry, we need your name, sir.
Gary Johnson.
Thanks, Gary.
Resident of Morro Bay. Yeah, I'm sorry. We're very excited because Arcadia Publishing Company contacted us and said, hey, how would you like to do a new book? It's then and now. And I think it's very, very important for the history of Morro Bay to have a book like this. And so Gary Rehm, you can see there, Roger Castle, Gary Rehm, they're the kind of the writers and got the pictures from people around Morro Bay, and then I was the photographer. I was impressed with this book because it shows that we're very, very rich in history in Morro Bay. It might not look it up, but it is. When you really get into a book like this and get into the older book that they published first, that Morro Bay has had a steady growth. It's not a Southern California growth. It's not like Long Beach Harbor. And in the back of the book, it's a very interesting picture because it came within one vote, as I understand it, in the 20s to turn the estuary into a Long Beach Harbor. So we had an artist draw a picture for us what it would look like today. 30-story buildings, ships coming into our harbor. Maybe Chief Pond might want to expand on it. But he lost his microwave, appliances in the house. Everything just kind of went blue. Now, fortunately, he had the electrical suppressors on his TV was okay and things like that. So in the darkness, they immediately called the fire department. And they're within there within a couple minutes because there could have been a fire in the walls. But because the fire department has the updated equipment that they can, they don't have to tear the walls out. If they didn't have this equipment, they'd have to take their axe. Well, anyway.
Thank you. Before you leave, where will the book be available after the Harbor Festival?
Pardon me?
Where will the book be available after the Harbor Festival?
Okay, we're going to have several book signings in town, so stay tuned, and I'll probably come up here and tell you where the book signings are going to be.
Thank you.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council, members of the city staff. Fire and police department. I just want to speak briefly here about I'm sorry. My name is Jeremiah O'Brien. Thank you, Bridget. President
Bridget's
of the Morro Bay Commercial
Fishermen's
Organization. I just wanted to speak briefly on the grant that was recently approved from the Moore Foundation. I believe hopefully the city will administer. And it will allow us to bring Rick Algert back on a part-time basis from his life of luxury. Rick is a very important person to us. We were very disappointed when he decided to retire. Hopefully this will allow him to come back here on a temporary basis with no funds expended from the taxpayer or the city. It will come from grant finances and funding. I know there's been some questions as to where he'll be housed. I was informed that there is a place to a desk available that is currently being used by another very part-time person. But in any case, Rick's expertise in fisheries issues is incredibly important to the industry. We've been on the upswing here for the last few years. 1997 was our lowest point I've got some paperwork here just to show you some of the increases we made in the last couple of years, some of the progress. 1997 was our lowest point. Some friends in a consulting company put this together for us very quickly. They had to leave the country, not being forced to. It was their own choice. They had to leave the country and didn't have much time. They'll give us a more thorough accounting here, but it just shows, for instance, in four boats in 2008, and there's dozens of boats. This is just four randomly chosen boats that we're responsible for. And this is something, too, by the way, that a lot of people don't think about. Normally we talk about money. We talk about pounds of fish in the middle of the dock. Those are certainly the two important things to fishermen. What's also very important to us, though, is these four boats were responsible for 21 part-time jobs and 13 full-time jobs. In an eight-month period, let's see. I'm going to leave this paper. It's very easy to read. You know, you're not going to have to spend the evening doing it. But those four boats generated just under $500,000 in wages. In 8 months of 2010, six active boats purchased 95 tons of ice and 7,500 gallons of fuel. Groceries and supplies that totaled almost $400,000. And that was, again, taking six boats out of the dozens that are currently employed in our harbor here. So I guess we're... I'll leave this paperwork with you guys, but the important thing to me here is the jobs.
Right.
The fishing industry employs a lot of people in this community, a lot of people.
Okay.
And when you see 21 part-time, 13 full-time jobs, just from four boats,
okay. I've got to ask you to wrap it up.
To dozens.
Okay.
So I just wanted to show you the importance of
thank you.
Keeping Rick on.
That's good news. Thank you.
Thank
you.
Good evening. My name is John Solo. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay and also a business owner. I was going to come up here and give you my speech about what we should do, but this morning I received a letter from one of the hotel owners locally, which I will give a copy to you guys. And it's really addressed to you, and he asked me to come here and read this to you, and I will probably close with some comments. So I want to make sure I have enough time to read his letter. It's to Mayor Peters, County President of a hotel person. Tourism is what Morro Bay economy is based on. Let's make sure that we're making the right choice. And that's a letter from Pradeep Patel, which I will give copies of to the staff. But I also wanted to make a couple comments. This is really not a surprise to the president of the chamber or the current acting director, which I had conversations with last Friday after they had a meeting with the city staff going over their budgets and so forth. But I really didn't get anywhere with them after I talked to them. I think we're at the cusp of a new, with all the monies that are being generated by the BID and the new BID going in to go 3%, it's really vital that even the board of directors recognizes that 50% of what the chamber does of their $360,000 budget is allocated to the visitor center. They should at least have the courtesy to have somebody at least from tourism, retail, or hotelier on their committee, on their choosing committee. And what I heard last Friday when I met with the president, the board is going to have a choice with the city manager, but we're going to narrow it down to five. And I think that there has to be somebody from other than an attorney, a financial advisor, a mortgage broker, and some other bookkeeper positions that are available. That I'm not saying their positions are bad, but I think there's a person that needs to be from the tourism industry in that committee choosing that person. And we don't need another gatekeeper like we have had, okay. At least for the visitor center. And that's
thank
all
you.
I wanted to say. Thank you.
Good evening, City Council and Mayor. I'm here to read a letter on behalf of Jody Kennemeyer.
Could we have your name first, please?
Oh, sure. I'm Amy Perry,
thank you.
I live on Shasta in Morro Bay. And I'm here to read a letter on behalf of Jody Kennemeyer, who was unable to attend this evening. So this is on behalf of her. I witnessed the tree cutting in both the plant, parks and recreation, and library parking lots. When I saw the signs posted in both areas that said, Civic Landscaping Improvement Project, enhancing the area with drought-tolerant and native plants, I became very concerned. I went to the Parks Department the next day. Tree cutting had already begun. I was referred to Mike, head of maintenance, and requested a return call. No one I spoke with could inform me if the library trees would also be cut. This was my biggest concern, as I and several others park here every day in the shade to read and listen to talk radio, etc. These were beautiful, leafy shade trees that turned fall colors, healthy, non-threatening, as far as anyone knew, and did not need watering at their stage in maturity. I went on to the planning department to inquire there. Again, no one I spoke with knew of any tree cutting to be done. I informed them that all of the cutting had just occurred in the other lot. I went to the library next to inquire with some staff there. Again, nobody had been informed of the tree cutting. I said they may be next, and they immediately contacted Parks and Recreation. The plan was then explained to them. They were given information sheets, which contained no details, and then the trees came down the next morning while the library was closed for a staff day. As far as I recall, 11 trees are gone from the library lot, and at least 9 parking spots of shade are gone as well, leaving a couple spots for the librarians to park. How can a total of 30 trees be cut, many mature, healthy, with trunks 8 to 10 inches in diameter, under the guise of improvement? Many will be replaced with oaks, which are slow-growing, non-shady, less colorful, and currently threatened by oak moths, as can be witnessed by the diseased oak that was spared in the parks and recreation lot. I mistakenly assumed this had been approved by City Council, but now I can only request that City Council consider replacing many of the trees with faster-growing, perhaps even more colorful, shady trees. Thank you on behalf of Jody Kennemeyer. So in summary, she's concerned about the 30 trees that were cut without notice given to City Council, and she's asking that they be replaced with not oaks, but shady, leafy trees.
Thank you.
And I'll give a copy of this to Rob.
Thank you. And I have to admit, I'm sorry, I forgot the staff reports. So right after public comment, we'll do the staff reports, and our Recreation Parks Director is going to address that issue if you want to stay and hear what happens or not.
Okay. Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council and staff. My name is John Barta, and I wanted to review a little bit for the folks at home who may be watching, as well as the folks present here, a little bit about the history of the lot that the city owns at the corner of San Jacinto and Highway 1. That's the lot that has the big four, which gave the city a big incentive, you know, financial incentive, you know, to go ahead with the fire station improvements that we've seen and ones that are yet to come. So the lot was an important financial piece of our ability to build a fire station. And it was put up for sale. An offer was made in excess of $2 million for that lot. However, due to some of the objections about maybe the trees would have to be cut down on a lot to do the subdivision to get maximum value out of it, the sale was did not go through. And so the city lost an opportunity there for over $2 million. Well, the study was done, and the study came back saying, no, we can't save those trees because there's the line of eucalyptus that goes through the middle of the thing just won't work. There's no way to cut the thing up and make it go. So the opportunity, however, was lost, and that lot sits there today still, you know, for sale. So the important thing to remember here is that the funds, and so what happened then is the funds, instead of coming from the sale of that lot as was intended, we passed the sales tax thing, and the sales tax initiative specified use for fire, public safety, certain public infrastructure issues. So in effect, what didn't happen over at the lot ended up being paid for through the sales tax that everybody's paying today in town. That $2 million that we could have had from that lot has now been displaced into our sales tax thing. So that money's been used up for the fire station, but that reserve that was intended to be there for that lot, it still has that potential that we're waiting to realize. So I'll talk more on this later. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good evening, City Council and Madam Mayor. My name is Linda Winters, and I am a citizen of Morro Bay. And I'm here tonight to speak to each and every one of you about a very important initiative that is on the November ballot. It is formally named the California State Park and Wildlife Conservation Trust Fund Act of 2010. It's really a mouthful, otherwise known as Proposition 21. And this is a very, very important initiative for all Californians. And what does this initiative involve? Well, thank you for asking. It involves separating the state parks from the general fund. And how would that happen? Once again, thank you for asking. It would be raising money by applying an $18 vehicle registration fee to all non-commercial vehicles in the state of California, which number about 28 million. And this would, all these fees would go into a designated trust fund that would be applied to the state parks, which are in peril of closing. We all know that the California budget has a huge problem. And into this trust fund would go all of those initial $18 fees. And what you get for those $18 fees? Unlimited day use access to all 278 state parks. That involves approximately 5 cents a day. And you would receive that unlimited day use access, and the California State Parks would receive $500 million to go into this fund to help to save them and other wildlife conservation groups. And it is a win-win situation for the people of California. Local support for this runs fairly thin. Unfortunately, we only had one county supervisor that's endorsed it. Four others had fairly lame excuses for not endorsing it, and I won't get into that. But this is a grassroots campaign that is going strictly by word of mouth. It was initiated by the people and for the people of California, and we hope that everyone will get out on November 2nd and vote in favor of this very, very important state park initiative. One more thing before I go. One of the things that I like to ask the children that I conduct school group tours through the state parks, I ask them if they know who owns the state parks. And I get answers like, God, President Obama, Governor Schwarzenegger, the legislature. And most all of them are very, very surprised to hear that they own the state parks. Every single resident of the state of California has part ownership of all of these state wonderful state parks that we have here.
Members up there who are kind of known for protecting the trees weren't out there doing what has been done before, trying to protect them. I suppose it was publicly noticed. I missed it, and for many months I've been watching pretty closely. But I'm sure you're going to say it was at this meeting or that meeting. I can't imagine that it happened in a vacuum. But it has shocked the community. Those are beautiful trees, and we miss them already. And finally, I wanted to just put my plug in for Harbor Festival. It's the very best thing we do here. It's the one time a year that we all get together, and all the political spectrums and all the stuff is put aside, and we work together and we make this thing happen. And it's going to be a great one this year, and I look forward to seeing you all there. I'll be down there all day, both days, working. So come say hi. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right, we'll bring it back, and I'm sorry, I will now go to our reports, and we'll start with Mr. Woods with the Recreation and Parks Department. I think Noah's going to supplement the comments there, so go ahead.
Certainly. Thank you, Mayor and Council. Morro Bay Recreation and Parks Department's been working in the last, I would say, 5 to 6 months on a project called CLIP. It's a Civic Landscape Improvement Program. It was initiated by staff because of the condition of the vegetation in front of the community center and the library and also the city hall and public services areas. Most of the ground covering has been dead for several years. We've got a major infestation of gophers. We've got other diseases that are plaguing some of the trees, and I'd be happy to get into that in a moment. The program went from there. We got an intern from Cal Poly, landscape architecture. His name was Russell Character, and Russell developed the program. His initial thought was quite huge. He wanted us to take over some land by City Park and really expand the green belt, and we reined him back in, and we kept him within the existing planters and hardscapes that are at our locations now. And as we reviewed the trees, and we've done so for years, and most of the, I would say most, about all of the ornamental pears that were down the center of the community center were diseased. It's called fire blight. These trees have suffered for probably 10 years or more. They were looking fairly healthy in about the first 5 years, but the wind and the salt have really done damage to those ornamental pears and also the Chinese flame trees. So taking that in consideration, replacing those trees was certainly one of our objectives. As Russell went through his particular project and he finished, staff took this project. We weren't satisfied with clear-cutting the entire lot all the way across. We feel there were some trees that were on our lot that needed to be saved and kept. And those are the trees that are standing now. The trees that we took out were basically your ornamental pears, 15 of them at the community center site. Again, the trunks were splitting on all these trees. They were salt and wind burned. Every arborist or landscape contractor that I've talked to and saw the trees agreed that these trees were diseased, they were in bad shape. These trees don't do well in our environment, in our climate. They do well other places, but not here. So that was just solidified our decision to replacing the trees. We also took out three eucalyptus trees that were on the west side, and these were larger trees, and these were ones that would be noticed. The other trees would not be noticed. They are trees that are not in the right-of-way. They are trees that are less than 6 inches at 4.5 feet up. So as far as the putting out notices and soliciting a lot of information, it wasn't needed, though I'll get into our timeline because the timeline was a little bit of a crunch time, and I would apologize for that, but only that. And we removed three fern pine as well. So total removal was 29 trees at the community center. We are adding 42 trees. Out of our tree guidelines, major vegetation replacement, the ratio we have is 42-3. Because the ornamental pears are exempt from coastal permits. They're small trees, even though for the layperson they would say, oh, they're green, they're nice, they're shaded. But as an arborist, you'd say they're fire blight, they're diseased, and they're underdeveloped, and they should be replaced. And so we continued. We had an opportunity with the tree committee. As we discussed the final report from our intern, we took it to the tree committee for a review and to get their input. Staff, we walked the site a couple of times with their subcommittee. We reviewed each and every tree, debate, save or not, and then we proceeded. We proceeded to go over to the library. We took out 8 Chinese flame. So in order, instead of going in and taking out one tree, coming back, taking another tree, it just exploded. And I think that was a shock to a lot of people, a lot of staff, community, all the way around. But the overall program, the Civic Landscape Improvement Program, is just that. It's something that's going to take dilapidated, old, dying vegetation into some new life. New vegetation underneath the oaks that are coming in are going to accent the community center, which is definitely a cash facility for us, as we do a lot of rentals on the weekends. And having it spruced up having the landscape tie into the library and have it tie into the community, to the public service and to the City Hall, is definitely part of the program. So as we go through this, and I would ask the community for a little bit of patience. I know it's tough right now, but we will get there. And as soon as the trees start coming in, we'll be starting to plant them. We've got a lot of undergrowth, which will be various of grasses that will maintain, that will hold up to the trees that we're putting in. It's not an entirely native landscaping. There are non-natives involved here. But aesthetics, the type of trees we're putting in, are going to do much better. So that was our plan. Unfortunately, our timeline was quick. I realize our resources are very limited, and we have an opportunity to get 100 free trees. We get an opportunity to get a local guy who may have a window of opportunity in his schedule to come in at a very good price. We take advantage of that, and we did. And the notices, when we did notice the City Council, we've noticed Recreation Parks Commission, not in great detail, but in my staff reports I've updated, say, hey, this is the program, what we're doing. If you wanted any information, I would certainly make that available. And a lot of folks weren't putting all of it together until the vegetation began to be removed. So know that we do have a plan. It's an extensive plan. It goes throughout that campus of the downtown government buildings. We're actually working on this facility as well, as far as turf removal and drought-tolerant plants. So that is the Civic Landscape Improvement Program. I'd be happy to answer any more questions if you have them.
Okay, Noah, did you have anything to add to that?
Yeah. I just wanted to also mention that the variety of trees that are being granted to us do not just stop at oak trees. We have a variety of mostly California native trees that will be going in. And also to extend the invitation for volunteers to come out on the 23rd, we have already invited groups from the high school, FFA, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts, and 4-H to participate with our planting. And as the tree committee goes, we appreciated the extension and the invitation to walk the site and provide our feedback, which we felt we were heard with the feedback there and the volunteer professionals that are on our tree committee. So I understand that it was a shock to some people, and we were looking forward to getting those trees in the ground as soon as possible to soften a kind of a harsh landscape at this point.
Okay. And then other reports, Harbor?
We are gearing up for Harbor Festival this weekend. We expect a lot of people. The weather should be nice. We always like to remind people at the Beach Street and North End of the Embarcadero to start thinking about parking elsewhere starting about Wednesday. It's just for a few days, and it winds up being a really great event. Last Saturday, we helped with the coastal cleanup, which was a really great success throughout the county, and we were really proud to be a part of that. Wanted to reiterate what Councilwoman Burchard said about the Harbor Advisory Board meeting next Thursday, where we will be discussing potential loading zones on the Embarcadero. We've tried to get the word out to the local businesses and appreciate any input. And Eric had a few things that he was going to add.
Oh, not a few things, just one thing is, on Saturday we did lose a commercial fishing vessel. Fortunately, both the souls on board were rescued with no problems at all. It was a boat out of Moss Landing, a little bit north, fishing black cod, and they took on water suddenly and sunk. Basically, the boat sunk out from under them. Fortunately, there was a 150-boat-strong recreational albacore fleet out there fishing for albacore and hunting around for albacore, and the boat was able to get to them within about 5 minutes, and then Coast Guard came and grabbed them. So kind of a bad news, good news, but everybody's alive. Everybody's coming home to fish another day.
Okay. And public services, Rob?
Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council. Just want to update on a few things in public services. We had a fire hydrant hit this morning about 6 o'clock. And by early this afternoon, the water department had it back into service. And they are tracking their time and the water loss for potential reimbursement. We have our friends from FEMA coming down to visit us tomorrow at a for a pre-community assistance visit. A community assistance volunteers that removed 44 pounds of recycling from those the North Morro Bay beaches. And our EIR for our wastewater treatment plant is out for public comment. The public comment period started last Monday and will run through the first part of November. There is electronic copy available on our website. There's a copy in the Morro Bay Public Library, the Cayucas Library, the Morro Bay Public Services Building, and the Cayucas Public Services Building. Also, there's availability if you want to purchase your very own copy at ASAP Reprographics. They can make you up a copy. It's about 500 pages, so it's a very detailed document on the wastewater treatment plant expansion, but I encourage everybody that has an interest in wastewater treatment to read that document.
Can I follow up on that?
And provide comment.
Okay. Given the temperature this morning, I think on my porch it was 104. Maybe they hit the hydrant on purpose just to have the shower.
Did a little cool off, yes.
Okay. Yes, Noah.
Mr. Levick, with the draft EIR and the comment period, the two presentations of that report will be at the Planning Commission on the 4th.
Correct.
And also at the JPA meeting on the 14th.
On the 13th.
14th?
14th, thank you.
14th.
Yes, so there will be two opportunities. Our Planning Commission has also set aside time in case they need it for the following commission meeting on the 18th. If there is additional public comment needed, they reserve some time at that meeting also to potentially take public comment at that time.
The period closes, was it noted?
I believe it's November 4th, but it's posted on the website in the notice of availability. It's on the front page of the website. You click on that, you get a link to the EIR document.
Okay, and then just another announcement regarding trees for the Planning Commission meeting on the 4th. From what I understand, the high school's solar project that involves quite a number of the cypress trees along their border is also on the
planning. That item has been scheduled for that agenda. It's going to come after the public comment period for the EIR.
Okay.
And their project, they revised it, so they're not removing cypress trees, but they are are going to be trimmed rather severely to install the solar arrays at the locations they've chosen.
Another thing I understand with that for the public's awareness is the project has in some cases been shifted to the north boundary of the high school, so basically running between the high school and the Cloisters property and the homes there. Is that the case? From what I understand, that has been
no. Their site plan still shows it along
in the parking lot.
Along the parking lot, for the most part, there's a few isolated solar arrays towards the north end on some of the existing ag structures up there. I think they're putting a couple solar arrays up there.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to make a comment. I would not like to let this issue of the project at the community center and at the library go without a comment that I think this kind of surprise happens because there's not due process. Due process in the sense of that this was not reviewed at Public Works, this was not reviewed at the Planning Commission. And yes, we were noticed and we were given brief descriptions, but I don't think anyone understood the breadth of what was going to happen here. And I'd like to know how people at this point can still have input. Are those trees absolutely going to be what they're going to be? Can people suggest faster growing trees? You know, it was implied that this was going to be a ground cover thing, and we didn't know that there would be 30 trees cut. Major trees cut were not noticed. The corner of Shasta and Kennedy, I think there was a tree cut in the right of way, actually. And so I think the public needs some satisfaction on how this is not going to happen again, that they will be involved, that they can have their say, and that they will at least be noticed. And then if they're not concerned, then that's fine. But I think that this kind of a project is not something that can be just done by the city, but that needs broader input.
Okay. All right. I was asked before we go to our break to once again announce where the electrical service is going to be interrupted, and that's on Tuesday, October 5th, from 8 to 3 on Bonita Street, La Jolla, Maine, Reno, Greenwood Avenue, Elm Avenue, and Hemlock. And, Rick, you said something about a reverse 911.
Well, is that the whole entire block or is it portions of them? Or
I was going to speak, perhaps, Mr. Leivick. We got an email or a letter, and I believe they just listed the streets by name. But there is a phone number on the letter, so the residents on those streets receive those letters. There is, I believe, a phone number on the letter for further follow-up, and we can do that as well in our offices.
Okay. Then let's go to our public hearings first because we're well after 7 o'clock. So public hearing B1, introduction and first reading of ordinance adding a landmark tree section to Chapter 12.08 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code. Who's got this one?
I have this one. Good evening, Madam Mayor, City Council, Rob Leivick, Public Services Director. Here with you for the first reading of a modification to Chapter 12.08 of the Municipal Code, adding landmark trees through the adoption of Ordinance Number 563. Last City Council meeting, we went through this ordinance and discussed the history of adding the landmark trees to it, which I've summarized in the staff report. There was discussion regarding better defining what a specimen tree was, so we passed out the definition for a specimen tree and then added that also to the section. And also just want to point out that last time we talked about the various tree lists, and like pointed out last time, the master tree list is what is referenced in master street tree list is what's referenced in the ordinance. The other lists are informational lists, and sort of like any other tree reference that you might have, you might look up in the Western Sunset Western Garden book to find an appropriate specimen. This is just a reduced list, so that would help people select trees that would be appropriate for their yards, open space in Morro Bay. And we'll get those up on our website as reference material. So I just wanted to point that out. And with that, that concludes my very brief staff report, and we recommend that council move for introduction and first reading of Ordinance Number 563 by number and title only. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions regarding that.
Okay. Any questions?
My one question, Mr. Leivick, is in the ordinance itself, it notices how the mandatory or the list number one can be altered, that you bring it before the planning commission. If people are interested, they talk to the planning commission. The planning commission makes a recommendation to the city council. For list two and three, how will those get modified?
Those are really advisory lists. I would say that they could be modified by, you know, this informal process that we have with the Citizens Tree Committee. There's nothing mandatory with those lists. You could choose a tree for your own yard that doesn't even appear on those lists. Those are just suggestions of trees that do well in Morro Bay. They're really nothing more that and carry no more importance than perhaps more than a strong suggestion, and that, you know, you might be better off planting this tree than another tree because it does better here. Maybe if you selected a tree that wasn't on the list, you might have to do more maintenance to it because it might not be the appropriate tree for this locale.
And I understand that, and yet these two lists will be posted on the city website.
I think just for informational items only.
So, but if the public would like to amend those?
If they have a strong feeling and we vet that through our Citizens Tree Committee, I mm-hmm. think we could amend those lists at any point in time.
Okay. And since the Tree Committee is not an official committee, could we do that through PWEB or planning instead?
Yes, we could, but like I said, those lists aren't official tree lists mm-hmm. either. So I would say keep the process as informal as possible. The other option is not to post them, but I would really like to have the information out there for people to use because it is good information, and there's was a lot of time spent working on those by our community volunteers.
Exactly. And that's why I'm wondering if we should actually amend the major vegetation guidelines, which you passed out for us or someone did tonight, and reference those two lists in the major vegetation so people would have another source of finding them. And I don't know if that's a possibility or not.
I think that would be another agenda item for some future date.
So
yeah, to me, those both of those lists apply more. I mean, what we're going
Absolutely.
Over tonight is the right-of-way trees, and those apply to the current project that was discussed earlier or to anybody's private property is where the major vegetation guidelines come into. So those lists would be more appropriate for those, and so the guidelines could be amended to somewhere refer to them and even provide a process if you'd like a process for amending.
My question, I guess, is if we wanted to include some language in this ordinance tonight that basically because this seems like the appropriate time, perhaps, to suggest as a council that we are not, based on these lists where it's referenced in this ordinance tonight, aren't suggesting that trees off the list are cut and that live, healthy trees are still a very important asset to the community and blah, blah, blah. Is that something that would come up tonight, or should we just plan on bringing this back to try to package that up a little more tightly at a future agenda item?
I think the latter rather than the former. This section of the code pertains basically only to trees within the right-of-way. It doesn't pertain to trees on city parkland property nor trees on private property. It's only the section is code is defined fairly narrowly as only referring to trees within the right-of-way.
And my amendment tonight was going to be to suggest we replace right-of-way with all public trees, which would not include state parks, but certainly would include those in parking lots, those at our parks and other places, because there's a little bit of a disconnect, I think, between our park trees and our right-of-way trees, and these are starting to come together, and they certainly came together in the list that we approved last week, that we're starting to see an overall plan for the city, that there aren't just right-of-way trees, there aren't just park trees, but we need this bigger umbrella. And so I would not mind at all if we started to blend those together, and that was going to be a suggestion I made tonight. And so I don't know if you want input on that from other bodies or if that's something we just want to refer back to staff, but that's going to be a suggestion I make to council tonight.
Okay, any other questions? All right, this is a public hearing. If you wish to speak on this item, please come forward.
Once again, good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council, staff. I'm here to address you on the so-called landmark tree ordinance. I say it's so-called because it's not what it appears to be. It's not just about trees. We all love trees. But it's an example of how government can do the wrong thing using the love of our love of trees against us. I believe government is here to do common good, and I see it done every day by the employees and the staff and the people in our city. I see it at a higher level, too. But when I see government doing something really, really wrong, I'm compelled to speak up because I want government to do the right thing and I want to support it when it does. The proposed ordinance is an underhanded attempt to regulate land use. It does this by treating groves of trees as individual landmark trees. You've heard this evening already the suggestion that this ordinance apply to all city-owned properties. Well, specifically, if you do that, you will make that lot at San Jacinto unsaleable because those trees will not come down there if that happens. That's the $2 million thing I was talking about at public comment. That $2 million right now is being made up by all the work that was done going to the voters and getting them to do the right thing to pay a quarter-cent sales tax to raise money to pay for fire, police, public infrastructure. What will happen if you do what is suggested here and include the use of the term grove as trees, you will be writing that lot off at a cost to the taxpayers of $2 million. Think of what that $2 million can do. What about Dial-A-Ride? How much struggle was there over $300,000 being lost to Dial-A-Ride from the state this year? That would be 7 years of Dial-A-Ride funding. So the idea, if you're going to use something and say it's advisory, put it in the words. This is advisory only and not required. Do not let it go, because you know what will happen years from now when you're no longer up there. Somebody will read that thing and say, no, you've got to follow those lists. They're not advisory. They're required. So put it in words. And as far as the use of the term grove goes, absolutely please take that out. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Oops, one more.
Good evening. I'm Chris Kopak. I live on Dune Street, and I have some eucalyptus trees, four eucalyptus trees in my yard. I'm a part-time farmer. I'm a beekeeper and a lover of the environment. And I have some questions kind of or concerns about the landmark tree ordinance, which include the language of exactly what Councilwoman Betty was saying was basically if the trees are in the right-of-way or if the trees are basically anywhere that border parks or anything like that. So I'm basically unclear about that because I would be really concerned and not really happy if it incorporated the trees on my property. So I was just trying to clarify which.
Okay.
I'm very concerned about this ordinance.
Okay.
That's it.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Okay. Comments? Well, and that's a question. How would this apply, Rob Schultz, I think I want to ask this of, to that property, that cloister's lot, if it was determined to be a historic or landmark tree? Thing. It would have to go through a process, and we've already designated some trees out there that are going to be cut, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And if it went through the process, as Councilmember Winnell said, it would have to be at the Public Works Advisory Body and then come to council. I'm going to turn to Rob Leivick about the once it is a landmark tree. I'm not sure what significance it even has under here. It still says it could be removed for hazardous reasons or anything else. So I'm not sure what you're doing by this declaring it a landmark tree. Provides no significance that I can find in here that says when it's a landmark tree, it will be preserved for the long life and health of that tree, but there's nothing that states that it then couldn't be removed because it's a hazard or because of the drip line or any other causes under 1208.070.
Okay.
So if you were trying to protect the landmark trees, in my mind, this ordinance has not done that.
Okay. All right. Other comments?
Well, I would like to follow up on that. I think what this ordinance does, and Mr. Leivick could probably talk a little more to this, but it creates a heightened review period. And basically, once they're identified, I would suggest that a public works director would probably notice that as part of their review of a proposed cut. And take the due diligence involved with realizing that, hey, this is a cherished tree within the community. It's been approved by the council. That, as far as I understand, that's what the value of a landmark tree ordinance is doing for us, is it gives us a chance to identify some really key trees and make sure that it's clearly a community priority to try to maintain them to the best of our ability. I'd also suggest, too, following up on the comments about the cloisters property, we wouldn't be making that choice in a vacuum as far as if we were to appoint or adopt a single specimen tree in that grove or a certain number of trees to constitute a grove in that area, because we'd make that choice with the information of realizing, okay, there are some clear development conditions on this property, and I would doubt you would find a majority or council members willing to make a choice that clearly would impact the development abilities and needs of a specific property in that way. So I think we retain absolute choice with adopting which trees are going to be declared. And again, it's more of an ability for us to recognize those trees and make sure that they just don't slip through the cracks.
Okay, Carla?
I'd make one comment that was said before that would kind of concern me. Is a landmark tree is any tree existing within the city limits So you are anywhere in the city limits, and Councilmember Winholtz made a comment that a private property owner would have to be the one to nominate that, and I don't see that in here. It says any citizen resident can nominate a tree. So what would prevent a resident from nominating another private property tree, a landmark tree?
I think we could change that to certainly owner. I don't know that anyone would support someone nominating someone else's tree. So to some extent, I think common sense would rule on that.
But
if it needs to be
rely
narrowed,
on common sense. No. We should put that in, definitely.
Okay, then change the word from resident to owner.
Yeah. We should definitely do that.
Wouldn't it just be private property trees would be the clarification of it?
Mm-hmm.
I share a little bit of the concern with the grove out there in the Cloisters property in how that would hamper our ability to sell that property if that grove was to be dedicated as landmark trees. And as I mentioned a couple weeks ago when this first came, I had a concern about the cost of groves. I think the individual trees and everything are wonderful, but there's a huge cost to maintaining a grove of trees. And so I'm still concerned about that cost to the city and that potential for that property, too. I wouldn't want to see that hamper our opportunity to sell it.
Well, again, don't you think that would be addressed in the review to establish it as a landmark tree or grove? I mean, the only way that's going to happen is if it's approved by the council, and I'm sure all of that would be taken into consideration in that approval.
I just think it lacks clarification when we have potential buyers then, because now, you know, that's already been brought to us before about what responsibility the city would take in removing some of those trees. If they have to wait to be subject to whether or not they can remove those trees, we potentially lose the sale.
You felt like it was important enough, those trees that had the longevity of not being in the immediate vicinity or process of the project could be identified and attain the landmark tree status.
Okay. Comments over here? Rick?
I don't know. It just seems we can sure make things complicated.
We're good at that.
I asked a question a couple weeks ago about the property on the Cloisters and was assured that it wouldn't be a hindrance to the selling of the property. So I assume that's still the same answer.
As the current ordinance reads, I mean,
I don't want to do anything.
If it's later by resolution designated a landmark tree, and then the section is used that it has to be maintained for the whole health of it, but I'm still read this section that just because it's designated as a landmark tree doesn't mean that you could not under 12.08.070 remove it. Is that the way you read that, Rob?
Yes, that is. I just want to point out that, again, going back to the purpose of this section, is this section of the code only regulates trees within the right-of-way. Doesn't do anything more than regulating trees within the right-of-way. And perhaps a simple way, if we want to maintain that this section only applies to trees within the right-of-way, in new section 12.08.150, it starts out, any Morro Bay resident may nominate a tree. Perhaps we could insert after a tree the words within the right-of-way. To further clarify that section, if we're going to keep this section of the code only for trees within the right-of-way.
I don't think that was the intent, was it? I mean, does that exclude trees on private property if people want to nominate them from their own property?
This section of the code only regulates trees within the right-of-way. It was my understanding that we were only going to look at trees within the right-of-way through the landmark tree ordinance in this section of the code, and perhaps at some future date look at private tree regulations.
But that's not what I got from what was brought forward to us, that this allowed, and from the committee, it allowed, if there are people that want to do private, that it can receive that same status, and yet they're responsible for the care of it.
Yeah, as a committee, we saw the private property elements as being much more complicated and unlikely to be utilized. And we basically, in the discussion about where to focus this, we wanted to focus in the right of way. But we also thought, as we develop this more, if there was a way, a mechanism for a private property owner to identify a landmark tree, because we see this as a very much more of an awareness and an educational opportunity for the community to celebrate the trees that we cherish, and we wanted to have that be an option. As we've talked with the Morro Bay Historical Society, we saw that they're developing a walking tour of Morro Bay, and if there was a private property tree that someone wanted to identify as a landmark because of its history, we felt like that would be a really interesting connection to have as an option. But I agree with Mr. Leivick. This is not the place for us to try to incorporate that, and we brought it forward very loosely as a suggestion, and I think it's been maintained as such as we've seen it move through the process.
Okay. So basically, this, we're just talking about right of way in this discussion.
And I think if that's the direction that council chooses to go, perhaps it would satisfy Mr. Schultz by adding within the right of way after tree within the first line of section 12.08.150. I don't know if that helps that situation.
Okay, is the council all in agreement with that addition? Okay.
No, I'm not. I'd like to see it open to anyone that wants to nominate.
Well, but Ms. Windholtz, I think if we wanted to proceed then and try to develop the private property option more, I would guess that there's a way we can do that, and we would be addressing that at a future meeting. But I'd like to hear what Mr. Leivick thinks about that.
Well, he's already said, and I understand, I'm just disagreeing, that he thinks it needs to be strictly public, and I understand that.
Well, it's not whether it's public or private. That's a policy question for you to decide. What it is the framework that we can go by as staff to know what this section is about. And this section states its purpose is to regulate trees within the right-of-way. And when you right in the middle of it now begin talking about landmark trees on private property or elsewhere, that should be
interested in going. So my question then is, could I get a little feedback on how you feel about the parks and open space, not open space, but any public property, and whether or not that can be included in the section, that it would change from being a right-of-way section to a public tree section? For example, I think that might be the way to have cured what happened this past weekend. That if that had been in this document as public trees rather than right-of-way, then it would necessarily have come to the committees, the cutting of the trees at the community center,
okay, so
because those are on public property.
But they're not landmark trees, so it wouldn't
matter. No, and I'm not talking about the landmark section now, but just the whole section itself is in regard to right-of-way trees. And so if we change the title or the label, that this is not strictly about right-of-way trees, but it's about public trees, then that expands it to parking lots.
Right now, I'm only interested in the documents that we've been provided and where we've worked in just doing right-of-way trees at this point. I think it's a different conversation.
I think that it's the right-of-way trees that causes the problems, and I think we need to have the option and the flexibility to be able to address those problems without 10,000 public hearings so people can tell us, yeah, those trees are dead. So,
do you want a motion?
Sure.
I move for introduction and first reading of ordinance number 563 by number and title only, with the change to 12.08150 to include in the right-of-way.
Do I hear a second?
I have a question. If you make a change, can it be first reading? And then the other question is, did you want to change the word from resident to... Oh, is that whole section leaving then?
Yeah.
Okay.
So can we add that wording and still have first reading?
I believe you can. It's a minuscule change, adding just in the right-of-way. The section is definitely just dealing with right-of-way, so I'm all right with letting it move to first. If you're not, though, and you feel like you need more public notice for that, we could go back to the first reading again.
Okay. How's the council feel? Are we comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable with it.
Okay. All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. Second. All right. Then we'll go back to our consent agenda.
Mayor Peters.
I'm sorry. You have to read.
This is ordinance number 563, an ordinance of the City of Morro Bay, California, amending Chapter 12.08 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code, establishing policies and procedures for landmark tree designation.
Now we'll go back. Thank you. To our consent agenda. And Betty, you wanted to pull A3 and 4, did you say?
Yes, please.
Okay. Anyone else?
Move approval of A1, 2, and 5. Okay. And 6.
Oh, second. 6 we already
sorry.
Did.
Sorry, yeah. 5.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? None. Okay. Betty, A3.
I'm trying to find you. It's the next to the last page. It's under section 6.2.1. And in the last paragraph, it uses the word commission. And I think it's probably a more accurate description to use advisory bodies, since we really have only one commission that's involved here, and that's the Rec and Park Commission. So I would just move that we adopt this. With the change wherever the word commission exists in that last paragraph, that it be changed to advisory bodies,
right.
Advisory board.
Okay. I agree with that. How about the rest of the council? Yes? Okay. All right. So somebody want to second her motion?
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Rick.
What? Rick seconded. Sorry. All right. And A4, Betty.
A4 is the authorization regarding the grant that was mentioned during public comment about from the Nature Conservancy. And I guess I have some question or concern. I have one of each, maybe. It's talking about receiving this grant that will go over 2 years. And my concern is over the physical impact. And my question is, since there is a Nature Conservancy office in the city of Morro Bay, why would this person, since the grant is coming from them, not be housed in their office? And my reasoning for that is, if under the physical impact you look, and it talks about the city will provide some in-kind services during the course of the grant, such as providing office space, telephone, computer use, and limited clerical support services. And one of the arguments that was made 2 weeks ago in terms of hiring an assistant planner was that there is absolutely no clerical support in that building, that everyone does their own, or at least maybe not the whole building, but certainly in the planning department. So my concern would be with the added responsibilities we've put there with the business licenses, et cetera, and now we're adding this volunteer position, which really, I think, is something that the fishing liaison group or the fishing association would be.
We talked about the Nature Conservancy, but my understanding is that there may not be room at the Nature Conservancy office, and we felt like housing him within the city would probably be the best bet. I don't think the fiscal impact is going to be significant whatsoever, and I think it's certainly a worthwhile grant to accept for the city to keep this process going with the trawl permits that the Nature Conservancy has started. I might suggest that we'd be happy to come back to you in 6 months to tell you a little bit about, or within perhaps the first year, to tell you a little bit about what that fiscal impact was, but I think it's going to be very minimal.
Okay. Anything to add from our harbor personnel?
I would just agree that whatever staff report support would be provided would be very minimal, more in terms of either proofing or formatting documents, but very limited. And from what I understand, there's minimal room at Nature Conservancy. I think this is a critical grant because we're at a critical point in the transitioning of these fishing rights and the associated permits that go with them. And Mr. Algert has been involved in this process since it started. It's very complicated, very detailed, and it has a lot of history. And I think you really need somebody who has that history that can go forward with this to be effective. So that would be my comment on it.
Okay.
I have another question. I think it's for Ms. Luker and another possible location, and that is the cable liaison building right across the street from the post office. Seems to be infrequently used.
and that maybe that would be another space that would be available. Is this a grant that is being matched by city funds? Because at one point you had talked about using some money in the Harbor Department for this.
Absolutely. We currently, it's not matched by city funds. We do have about $45,000 or $50,000 in the Harbor Fund that when we brought back to the reorganization, we talked a little bit about the possibility of using some of those funds, but that this is not a matching grant. If it was a matching grant, we would have indicated that in the fiscal impact statement. It is $35,000 for year one and $35,000 for year two, really free and clear from the Nature Conservancy through the Moore Foundation. It's part of a bigger grant that they've gotten. So, again, the only fiscal impact to the city is currently the some small clerical support. And we'll certainly look at the Fisherman's Liaison Office. We won't rule that out.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, just for clarification. So then none of that reserve money that we saved would be used on this project?
No. Okay. Remind the council, when we did the harbor reorganization, we did let you know that if we had plans to use those additional funds for contracting out, we would come back to you. And we haven't done that. And we don't have any current plans in the near future for that at this point.
Okay.
And I apologize. I didn't know there was an office out here. I just thought it was NEP.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other comments, or can I have a motion?
Move approval of A4.
Second.
Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None?
I'll vote yes with reservation. I think it's not wise that we, if someone's offering us a public grant and they have a, I'll just leave it at that.
Okay. So this was a unanimous yes?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Next item, C1, status report on water usage for August 2010. Dylan? Oops. Switching microphones.
Is that better? Yeah. All right, there we go. Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. We usually keep this on the consent agenda. I wanted to bring it forward tonight and draw attention to we're basically asking at this point to go off of mandatory conservation. The reason for that is that the state water allocations have increased. We may have a need in the future to go back on mandatory conservation, but that would be during the limited duration of the shutdown. And so what I'm asking at this point is to basically let's end mandatory water conservation for the remainder of the year with the potential exception of the state water shutdown. And during that time period, it's kind of a situation that's in flux based on the email that you guys got today. We would come back with a recommendation if we needed it to go on to conservation. But really the concern is that if you stay on conservation longer than you need to, if you just sort of run in a continual conservation mode, you sort of harden that demand and you lose that effectiveness. And so my recommendation is that you keep your mandatory conservation for when you really need it. Over the course of this year, state water allocations have come up and come up and come up. We're actually at the point now where we won't even use all of our allocation because of how conservative we were in the beginning of the year. We'll leave properties as well as the water customers. So we've got our noticing dialed in where it's getting pretty good saturation. I think it's getting to both renters as well as homeowners. So we would do that with our typical noticing and basically mass mailing that we would send out. And then we'd probably put a news flash or blurb on the website as well.
So then we'd go off conservation in October and go back on in November. So are we going to re-notice them when we go back on then? I'm just wondering on the cost and the timeline.
Sure. The cost for those mailings, it varies tremendously depending on who we have do it. The printing is probably the biggest cost. I think the mailing cost is a couple of $100. The printing costs range from $500 to about $3,000, depending on how fancy you get. My guess is we'll be in the $500 to $800 range for the notice to go off. And then going back on, I would anticipate it's pretty standard for us to do some kind of special notice about the shutdown and talk about the shutdown because we have some water quality changes that occur during that period as well. And so that notice, whether we go on or off of conservation, I think we'll send out. And we have a budget for that. These are budgeted line items in the water budget. I think we reserve $10,000 for notices throughout the course of the year.
Thank you.
Okay, Rick, you had a question?
Is there a problem holding off on lifting conservation until after state water shutdown is finished?
No, the concern I would have, and the reason we're recommending going off now, is that you go, we may, the shutdown's such a dynamic period of time, and you go leading up to it, there's some questions about whether we can use our sources in Choro or not, and what stream flows will be in Choro. And so it's kind of a fairly complicated dynamic. There's a high likelihood if we have to go on conservation during the shutdown that we'll want to be on conservation at a level that's more severe than where we're at right now. And so what I don't want to do is sort of I want to reserve sort of the effect, and the when we really have a need, let's go on conservation. If we don't really have a need, I think you sort of create complacency in your community when you sort of drag this out and you don't need it. And so that's my only concern, is that we're sort of hardening our demand.
Okay, and are the changes going to necessitate, like as before with the kidney dialysis patients and all that? Are we going to have to go through all that stuff again?
Yeah, that's a good practice for us. You know, normally our water source is a chloramine, and that can be fairly we've talked to all the dialysis clinics we can kind of reach out to, and they all say, hey, we treat our own water. We don't actually use your water anyways. So we think it's a moot point, but it's something that we'll make a big deal out of, just because if there's that off chance, you really don't want to take risks with people's health like that. So we will send out a notice during the state water shutdown informing everybody that we make a switch. And we get a lot of calls because we basically get more chlorine taste and odor, because we go from a chloramine to a free chlorine during that period. And so we certainly will send out a notice at that time.
Okay, Betty. One question, then a comment. My question's related to your answer to my question regarding future water usages, and you said that we will be using CMC water rather than appealing to the State Water Board to use 11A. Is that right?
No, CMC will be a measure of last resort for us. And the reason that we'll reserve CMC as a measure of last resort is that you go, with CMC, it's an exchange. And what we've done in years past, and what we're likely to do, we haven't hammered out all the details. They just basically come back and said they'll consider it this year. But the way that it works with CMC is we get water from them during the shutdown, and then they'll want us to pay them back next year. The concern I have with that is if deliveries are real low again next year, we might have to give our whole allocation to CMC. And so you go, I would prefer to use the sources in Choro even prior to using CMC's water. I really want to hold CMC as a measure of last resort.
Why wouldn't we give them our excess water from this year then, since you said we'd have some?
We won't. They don't want it. They won't basically take it over the course of this year. That agreement, they'll basically stipulate to us through that agreement they want us to give it back to them next year, because they're probably in a very similar scenario to us, and that the way that the delivery percentage has changed this year, everybody, I think, is kind of in an odd spot, because we were all very conservative in the beginning of the year, and the amounts kept going up, so that at the end of the year we're all going to have a little bit of excess water, and it really just goes away.
And so to use the 11A, you will get permission from the state first?
Well, that's complicated again, and I hate to give you complicated answers to what sound like simple questions, but our water rights permits in the Choro Basin allow us to take water, provided that the creek's flowing at 1.4 CFS. If you guys can tell me what the creek flow will be in November, then I'll answer the question a little firmer, but we just don't know. And so to be on the safe side, we've talked about initiating that petition and broaching that subject with the state. I think there's some value, and I'll let Rob chime in if he feels the need, but I think there's some value from a strategic standpoint as well in dealing with our water rights and basically demonstrating to the state that the city doesn't make excessive use out of this. But there are times of the year and conditions in which
that it's smarter just to wait. I think that's where you were going, Mr. Grantham, that the 30 days is not a big deal. And I think the psychology of that, I understand what you're saying, but I think the public gets that. And I think that to wait until after the shutdown, if we want to go off at that point, is wiser. And I would not be in favor of. I think it's less confusing to the public. You give them one message, and that's the way it is.
So what you're suggesting then is to continue at the existing levels through the shutdown, and then
To until we get to shutdown. And then what I heard Mr. Wade said is that at the shutdown he wants to go to level four,
yeah.
And see where we are at three.
Okay, so that's I definitely agree with that. I think that announcement and the heightened level of conservation is warranted and gives the public the message that we've been in tight water times, but this is an opportunity now for us to step up and make sure that we're not going to create an undue burden on our own community, whether it's the water quality or cost for us to provide water at that time. And then, Mr. Wade, if we go forward with that, do you need tonight our authorization then to reduce the conservation?
No. The way that our code reads is basically you guys declare the emergency, and then actually Rob's the one who wears the hat, one of his many hats, to decide what level we should be at. So I think if you guys aren't interested in ending it tonight, if you want to just let it ride, basically make that motion that you go, just leave it as it is, and we'll take that and run with it. So I don't think we need sort of any direction more than that.
I have a question, though. My understanding when we went to conservation mode, and I agree, I mean, it's a real small window now, but my understanding was that we had to have a rationale for doing it. And so if we're not in a issue with water shortages right now and we have excess, then I would question whether or not we have a justification to continue it over the next 30 days.
If I have to, I'll try to answer that. But that's also my concern, right, is that we put ourselves in a position where we really don't – over the year, this has changed. And you go, we kind of did something this year where council sort of took that jurisdiction from staff and said, hey, we want to be in mandatory conservation. And so we've held that. And I really – I'm happy however we land tonight and that we've had this discussion. And I think that was kind of what we were looking for, putting this on the agenda and pulling it out from the consent calendar, is let's talk a little bit about conservation, what to do with it. I'll look to Rob if he wants to chime in on whether we get in trouble for being on mandatory conservation when we can't. I think we could probably come up with some findings, the strength of those. I haven't heard any challenges, though, so I don't think we're getting ourselves into too much trouble there.
I would have more trouble in ending it tonight in that this is entitled a status report on water usage, and nowhere in the report does it really even talk about ending the mandatory water conservation. So I didn't want to chime in on that and stop your conversation, but really it was just a status report on the water usage. So
okay, then whose jurisdiction is it to say that notice should be sent out about not being on the conservation right now? Is that something that
you declared the emergency? You have to take the emergency off. The stages is up to the public service director. He can lower it to any stages or heighten it at any time
without our permission.
Without your permission.
So if we talk about just what we think should happen tonight, he can go ahead and make that decision.
Yes, okay. If he feels that's the correct decision.
Okay. Well, I'm going to chime in and say that I think that we should definitely take, remove the conservation notice now and use it as the first notice that in November we are going to have to go back to it. I know it's duplication, it seems like it, but I think that the money spent is nominal, and I think it's doing a good thing because it's reminding our citizens that we were in it and that we're not for a little while, but we will be again.
You're in the emergency now. It would take you to come back and find the findings that you're not in the emergency. So
it would have to come back to us.
No, because he could lower it to stage one or level one or whatever, which is.
I thought we'd taken it down from the emergency level.
We did from 4 to 3. There's 4 levels.
Yeah.
So
okay.
I don't think
we can go to the lowest level of water conservation. But we can't eliminate it without this coming back to council to rescind the emergency.
And so what we were asking for, instead of just bringing that resolution directly to you, it was brought to you as a discussion item on whether you want us to bring that resolution back now. If not, we will still hold that in until after the state water shutdown and bring it back at that time for further discussion.
But he wants to lower it to the first level.
He can
go
do that.
And do that.
Yes.
Okay.
At this time.
I just wanted to make sure that wasn't.
Okay, so what's council's pleasure here?
To leave it as is.
Rick? Okay. All right. So we're accepting this report. Thank you.
All right. And then we go to item D1, request for facility use fee waiver for a Mayor City Council Candidates Forum sponsored by the American Association of University Women and the League of Women Voters.
Madam Mayor, I'm going to excuse myself because I'm a candidate here.
Okay. Thank you. Andrea?
That was a great staff report, Madam Mayor. I think that concludes my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I will add just a few bit more. That I think there's actually maybe one other sentence, is that we do have a candidate forum scheduled for October 5th, 2010, and it's sponsored by both the AAUW and the League of Women Voters. The fees for that event are approximately $150,000, and those organizations have asked for a fee waiver, as you know.
$150.
$147.50.
Okay. $150,000.
Oh, wow. I think I was still on water.
A really valuable building.
Excuse me.
Okay. It's $147.50.
Thank
okay.
you. And as you know, we don't grant fee waivers. We bring in the city council for your discussion. That concludes my staff report.
Okay. And we can't even give her the excuse of it being late. It's early. Okay. Any comments on this?
Yes.
What?
I'm just going to say right now that I'm not going to support this because, in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have supported the first one. It's a minimal cost. The first one, we waived. Everybody came in and they set up the chairs and broke down the chairs and everything else. But considering that myself and you also and Mr. Smuckler all campaigned 2 years ago, it's $25 per candidate. It's a very minimal fee for the use of the building. And we're just not in a position these days to be waiving fees all the time. I think we set a precedent if we keep down this path that we're going to waive the fees all the time. And there's six people that are still candidates, so it's $25 each to their campaigns. I mean, we paid for four or five forums when we campaigned, and this is only the second one.
But the major cost is going to be the videotaping, and they will have to pay for that,
right.
And that's a lot more expensive.
We all paid for it, too, several times over. I just don't feel that the city should be waiving. This is a nonprofit fee already, and as it's passed on to those candidates, it's $25 each. I think it's very minimal, but if we set a precedent, we keep waiving all these fees, everybody's going to ask us to do it all the time. So that's just my feeling.
Yeah, we paid for them before, the candidates.
I thought we waived the fees before.
No,
I remember
writing a check. I wrote a check.
To the city?
No, to the organization, not to the city, but to the organization that rented it. We wrote a check to the chamber. We wrote a check to the other organizations that when they ran the forums, and it included AGP and the cost of the building, our share.
Does anybody remember if we have a history of doing this or if we just done it once?
It's not been a consistent history. I think we've waived fees in the past, but it's been a few years. I don't believe it's been recently. Looking back at Joe.
I would agree with you. It has been inconsistent. Years in the past, there might have been a few that have gone through, but just recently it has been no fee waiver.
Okay.
So we've kept the price down as low as we can go. There are some direct costs that we want to recuperate.
Okay. All right. Any more discussion?
I think it's their initiation into their time of, giving of themselves. So, I wouldn't support that.
All right. Somebody want to make a motion?
I make a motion to not support D1 for a fee waiver.
Second.
Regarding a fee waiver.
Second.
Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay. 3-1. Mr. Speckler opposed. All right. Future agenda items.
So do we need to bring up the water conservation for a future agenda for the next meeting?
I don't know. I thought we just kind of let it go.
Okay.
Anything else, future agenda?
Yeah, I'd like to, and it doesn't need to be done soon, but I'd like to address the major vegetation and how to incorporate the lists, two tree lists, into that document.
Okay. And anything over here? No?
Actually, just a follow-up question in regards to public comment tonight with the Chamber of Commerce CEO. we seem to need to talk about that, and I'm wondering what in response to that comment, we can do.
Before we move on, I'm sorry. Madam Mayor, is there a second to my concern about major vegetation?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we should determine that first.
I guess the question is it something that you is it something that you want done?
Mm-hmm. Well,
you want it brought back.
Okay, that's the question.
But is
if it's something that we all want done, then we can send it to PUAB. I think that's what you're saying, right?
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. We'd like to send that to PWAB.
Mm-hmm. So I would recommend sending it both to PWAB and to Recreation and Parks Commission.
Okay. Thank you.
And then they'll bring back recommendations to the council.
Perfect.
And you say Recs and Park, but because it involves trees, does it need to not go through planning because they're not mandatory trees and planning only deals with mandatory trees?
Over to Rob.
I would say that the major vegetation guidelines come out of our zoning code. Is the reason why it's there is to define what major vegetation is, so we know if a coastal permit is required. I think the two Parks and Recreation and Public Works Advisory should make a recommendation to our Planning Commission, because that's how the major veg came through in the first place. Then bring that Planning Commission recommendation directly to City Council.
Okay. Now on this side of the table, where were we?
I just wanted to follow up on the comments regarding the CEO for the Chamber of Commerce.
I'm not sure that we weigh in on that. I mean, it seems to me that that's a Chamber decision, isn't it? It's not a Visitor Center question, is it?
It's an interesting question. Currently, our agreement with the visitors, our agreement with the chamber, doesn't address that issue of a board member. I'm happy to follow up with the chamber president on your concerns, but certainly I can do that. Okay. But I'm not sure it's within your purview.
I think it's something we could really rule on as a council.
No, but I'd like to ask. I agree with Mr. Smuckler and having direction to the city manager to do whatever is possible to include someone in the tourism business, since the city taxpayers fund that visitor center.
Well, and certainly we can all make individual phone calls too. So,
but it's, yeah, not the same as the body. I think is where Ms. Borchard's going. But my question is that. Already open for application, and is there a deadline? Is that something we need to talk about tonight? And if so, can we do that, or do we need to mention an emergency, or because it's just advisory to the city manager, we can just discuss it?
I know that the applications are currently available. I believe the interviews are sometime, the final interviews the week of the end of October.
Yes, that's pretty immediate.
So we need to move on it.
Well, we can't discuss it tonight.
We could move it as an emergency item because of the time frame.
I guess I'm not sure what your discussion would be.
And I'm not sure what the emergency is. One of the interviews are not till the end of October.
That's my understanding, but I'm not comfortable telling you that. That's what I've heard. That's my understanding, but I don't know that I don't have dates.
That's the final interview of the last selected candidates, though.
I think you're right.
So even. I mean, Mike.
And I'm not sure if the goal is to obtain someone on the interview panel from the tourism, then we could do that from a staff level, from a direction wise, and take that tonight. But as a formal motion, and what the ramifications are if they don't agree to that, should be more of a public hearing, so we understand what the contract says and everything.
Thank you.
So are we happy with just asking the city manager to suggest that to the chamber?
Giving direction, yeah. And then she can report back to us.
And again, I will say that individually we can do that as well.
Yeah, but I'd like to...
Because there wasn't time to do anything collectively.
I'd want to hear back.
Okay.
Before the window closes, so...
All right. Okay,
so,
anything else?
So Ms. Luker would be reporting back to us about that conversation.
With a memo or something. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay, and Carla, you have the closing quote.
It's not what happens to you, but how you react to it that matters.
Thank you. With that, we're adjourned.